Hi, I'm Sarah.
I'm Ben.
And you're listening to
What's New?
Nancy Drew.
Come get a clue.
Boop, boop, doo. This podcast is, as always, part of the Fandom Limb Media Podcast Network. So for other pop culture podcasts, go to fandomlimb.com.
Here on What's New, Nancy Drew, Sarah and I recap the latest episodes of The Nancy Drew Show starring Kennedy McMahon. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You and I both just got back from Michigan trips. Did you feel a little Horseshoe Bay on your vacation?
I did. It was very nice. I did not have a lobster roll there, but I don't know if Michigan is known for their lobster rolls anyways.
I had one and it was not good.
Oh, okay. I'm glad I didn't try it then. Also, you know, lobsters is making me a little sad after this week's episode.
Yeah. We'll talk all about that. All right. So we are talking about season 4, episode 9, The Memory of the Stolen Soul. We open with an iconic shot of one Nancy Drew looking like one Buffy Summers.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful crossbow, beautiful leather jacket. It was perfect. Half up, half down hairdo. Very late 90s.
I mean, that was fully a Buffy reference, right?
It had to be.
Like 100%.
And then she talks up to Nick about how he created the Sin Eater slaying system. I was like, yeah, this is Buffy.
It made me very, very happy. This was all about they were going to try to kill it, because the last episode ended with how do we kill the Sin Eater? So here we are.
Yeah. So fortunately, Nick was able to create this. And he's talking about a system. They got the crossbow to kill it. Ryan is on Roundel watch and he put up night vision cameras. But more importantly, Nancy has these seashells that she has been getting from Tristan every day since the Ghost Web experience.
I thought it was really cute that Nick asked her who her secret admirer was. Was it Nemo? Ariel? Yeah. They're just these beautiful little seashells with messages written in Sharpie inside of them.
Which is so cute. And Nick says that he's happy for her if it's what she wants.
How convinced were you when Nancy's explaining what she wants?
Oh, I'm convinced that she's trying to convince herself it's what she wants.
Yep. But
it's true. It is very uncomplicated with Tristan. And she's like trying something new, trying honesty and communicating well, modeling herself after Nick and Jade.
Which was sweet. And I also think legit and making it relatable to who she's talking to. I do think when she got to the, you know, honesty and everything, I was like, okay, that's convincing. But at the beginning, she's like, he's open, it's uncomplicated. I'm like, if someone's like, I'm doing something because it's uncomplicated, especially when it's related to love, I'm like, no, love is complicated. Like, things shouldn't have to be the end of the world. And yes, there shouldn't be curses and things attached to stuff. But, oh, I like this person because it's uncomplicated.
He also has nice arms, though.
Lobster arms. Well, Nick is happy for her. He says it sounds healthy.
They go on to talk more about the Sin Eater, and they need to figure out what the first sin the monster consumed was. And so they need to go to the Black Door Mirror because Bess knows everything, and she said that it will hold on to everything it witnessed. And the Sin Eater is vulnerable under a black moon. So they need to get the first sin and inject the monster with it. And they only got 48 hours for her aim to improve.
But then her aim was really good in that moment.
And they look so cute.
Yeah, I was a little like, oh, is this... I was wondering the second viewing when they're like, it's always off by 3 inches. That made me think about the end of the episode. From my first viewing, I'm like, oh, does that mean maybe she missed by 3 inches and actually didn't kill the creature? But we can get to that.
But first, we go to the opening credits and then check in at the Drew residence, where Bess is wondering if her pearls make a statement to say she is not guilty. And I love Carson's just like, I don't know, but you should say not guilty.
Her outfit was stunning. I think it said not guilty.
I agree.
And Addie is back.
Yeah, she took a day off from her new job at the bank because she wants to be there to support Bess. It was good seeing her because it's been a while.
Well, her parents aren't too pleased with Bess. And I don't think I was too pleased with Addie in that moment. Like, I don't like you this season. But it all comes around. It all works out. Thought it was very, very cute that Addie's mom had been sending Bess flamingo memes every day.
Super cute. I'm kind of jealous. My mother-in-law, I don't think, can send memes from her phone. But maybe when she gets a smartphone, she would be able to do that.
Oh, God. She would definitely send you flamingos, I'm sure. She buys you flamingos.
She does, yeah. Meanwhile, Carson is lecturing George about giving false hope because George is like, don't worry, Bess, we're definitely going to drop all these charges. And he's like, no, you need to keep your feelings out of it because you don't know anything could happen in court.
But it's okay because she is Kevlar George. Feeling for...
Yeah.
We go over to a potentially separate plot of the episode. We'll see how everything's all tied in together eventually. But Ace is with Cece at the morgue, and it is chilly willy inside because the thermostat is stuck.
But they have a new body there that unfortunately has been charred beyond recognition. And they think that it might be Mia Preston, who is a camper who went missing a few days ago. We get a quick moment where they almost break Connor's mug, and we learn that that was the mug that Leo gave him. And Connor said that Leo made him promise, you know, to keep it forever. And it says the world's okayest dad.
Do you want a world's okayest mom mug?
I would rather have the world's best mom from Stargirl? Mug. I would rather have that one.
Fair, fair.
So Connor leaves. He says someone's going to come to fix the air. And Ace starts on the paperwork for Mia's body. He's talked in previous episodes about how he's not alone, that he has the dead bodies to talk to. And we see he actually does talk. And, you know, he's saying like, hi, you know, hi, Mia. I'm Ace. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, that's a good continuity callback, but also very depressing.
It is. But then also, I mean, he gets a response. I think maybe before he knew about the supernatural, he may not have done that. But now he knows that, like, their spirits may be there. And maybe he does that just to check in and make sure to help them.
And then the charred lady talks back because she's like, oh, this is someone that I can trust and count on.
Yeah. Huh. And so the water turns on, the radio starts going all staticky, lights flicker.
It was a little scary. It was a little like classic ghost rattling chains moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks, he like looks over at the drawer, the morgue drawer where the body is. He's like, did you do this?
I don't know if it's common, like common knowledge for ghost lore or anything, but I really like how in Supernatural, ghosts get better at their like ghosty skills in communicating the longer that they are a ghost. So like they've had a couple of storylines in Supernatural where you see from the ghost point of view that they don't know how to reach out. And so that's why like the water goes on or like the staticky and the lights because they're like attempting to. But then it takes them a little while before they're like, oh, this is how I can control this. I don't know. It kind of seems like that was happening a little bit that she was like trying to figure out how to communicate.
No, that's cool. We go over to Nancy and Nick and they have made their way down to the black door. They have one shot to get the mirror to tell them its secrets.
Fortunately, Nick is super skilled at building all the supernatural stuff. And he built an extractor that will rewind the mirror to show them everything that the mirror seen and heard.
He had help building this stuff with somebody that gets mentioned later this episode, at least financially.
Yeah, maybe. Because it seems like he has a supernatural knowledge covered, but then it's like, well, I needed to do this. What part might help? And then maybe that's when he calls in his BFF.
Right. Because it just seems kind of like a weird thing to give him. I know Nick has made stuff in the past, but this episode in particular, his skill set on that seems to be heightened from what I remember it being anyways.
And it's really fast. I mean, he says he made this in only 4 hours. So yeah, maybe he did get help or maybe he previously has gotten help and so he is better at it and can move faster.
Yeah, I buy that.
So they attach the extractor. The smoke starts coming out and Nick's like, okay, we got to take this back. And she's like, no, we need to wait. And that's when we see six men find out those are the founders of Horseshoe Bay, and they are creating the Sin Eater, which looks like a little tentacle starfish thing.
Is it bad if I think it was cute?
I don't think that's bad. I mean, people thought that the baby wraith was cute.
Yeah. Little squiddy.
We go to a commercial break and come back to City Hall, where Addie is having trouble getting in. And while she's dealing with that, Bess goes over to Nancy, and we learn that she told Ace not to come.
Why didn't she tell Ace not to come?
She didn't say. She just told him not to worry about it, kind of thing.
Ryan shows up to talk to Nancy, and she clearly has taken that thing from Tristan and doesn't tell Ryan. She's using very loose language when talking about what she needs his help with, because she borrowed something from someone on a fishing trip and all this. And really what she's trying to do is not let Ryan know that she's borrowing things from the glasses, because mm-hmm. they're rivals. And he literally created a new profession just so he can mess with them, basically.
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, a fishing trip. And of course we know fishing trip. Oh, that's Tristan. And yeah. So
yeah.
It's all this scene. I liked how this scene worked. First time I was watching it, I actually missed the Addie moment. Because everything was just happening very quickly. Like, you're getting the whole cast coming in for the trial. And it was cool how that was done, because it's definitely leading up to something big's about to happen.
Yes, I agree. It was really nice to see everyone there supporting Bess. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I'm thinking because they needed Ace for that separate storyline. I'm thinking that's why he wasn't involved.
Yeah, but then there's a line later about their friendship that we mm-hmm. will obviously get into. So I'm like, this is feeling shoehorned to me. I don't know, we'll get to that. But yeah, it was weird that Ace wasn't there. It didn't seem believable. But last season, they got a lot of stuff they got to get in.
Yeah. And then they go into the courtroom. Nancy and Nick are discussing the starfish all monster thing, and they're trying to remember what the phrase was that the founder was saying, but they can't quite get it. And then we have a returning character. Cameron's back.
Yeah, for 2 seconds, and really just to show that he and George are still talking, which of course they are, because it's like a day or two later.
And he is not on trial for killing it in those loafers, but how awkward is George in that scene?
Extremely. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about these two. It feels to me very... this is the last season. We didn't want it to be the last season. We don't have time to get these two back together naturally, so we're going to give them other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoy Jade, and I think the Jade storyline, well, that episode was just great, where Jade finds out about the supernatural. So I feel like that is being fleshed out. But Cameron, as of right now, really truly feels to me like they're just like, oh, well, George gets to end the series with the love interest, is literally all I feel like. Unless it's up to some big evil thing.
Yeah, or they're showing that Jade is a townsperson who is accepting of the supernatural, and maybe Cameron is not going to be. And so we see the two sides of a new relationship and working out, not working out. I don't know.
We didn't get his opinion on it this episode, really, did we?
No, I don't think we saw him again.
No, which is... yeah. Yeah, almost felt like there was like a scene cut out or something. Just his connection here felt very random. But then we get a character that I cannot stand. And as I was frantically taking notes, I didn't even write down her name. I just wrote this crazy lady.
Kelly Farquhar.
Farquhar.
Yeah.
Extremist is there. And I got a bad feeling.
She just looks so evil sitting there. Yeah. And then she's passing notes. And so George is like, oh, well, two could play at that game. And she writes a note and passes it to Carson and just looks at it and just puts it down. I really want to know what was on that note.
My headcanon is that she wrote the word information. Because she wanted to play that mind game too, Sarah. It was really funny. And we find out that the charges of breaking and entering have been dropped. It's like, wow, yay. Problem solved.
Yeah, everything fine. Wraps up in a nice bow.
Except there are shiny new charges that are way worse. Harm, you know, endangering a minor, yada, yada, all this stuff.
And violating community standards, disseminating false information contrary to the welfare of the public.
Bess just looks so upset.
I mean, yeah, she is doing her best to help people. And Carson is pissed. He's like, you can't just spring these new charges. And so they have 48 hours for the new preliminary hearing. This is the fastest moving court I feel like that has ever existed in the history of all courts.
Fair, fair point. And they're all upset and supportive of Bess. And as they start to file out of the courtroom, they look at the painting of the founders. Nancy's photographic memory kicks in, and some words she reads on there. She's like, oh, I remember them saying this down in the basement earlier with Nick. And it says, the soul survives, our truth remains.
Yeah, that's got to be important.
Right. So Bess is freaking out justifiably. If she's convicted, she'll be deported, we're reminded. And this is where I'm like, ooh, I really do love her outfit.
And Addie is comforting her. They're back at the Drew residence. And Bess is like, thank you so much for being here, but can you give me a minute? She goes over to Nancy and gives her the jar of acquirement. Because the Black Moon is coming in 2 days, and in this jar can turn spoken truths into liquid form, and that's how they can inject the Sin Eater. And Nancy finally recognizes the Bess as a badass and can keep all these balls in the air, juggling everything, and Bess is like, well, once a keeper, always a keeper.
I love, love, loved that they took time and had Nancy acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Because Bess is literally in so much danger and so much stress right now, and was like, okay, I'm dealing with my own crap, but here's, you know, me solving all your problems too.
Yeah.
Helping with everyone's problems.
Yes. And then we get, you know, we had the reference of Buffy in the beginning. I thought this might have been a little reference to Sam Winchester from Supernatural. Nick comes up and goes, so get this, which is something Sam says all the time.
Oh,
like, there are cool smash cuts of, like, you know, so get this, get, like, tons of them. And so
maybe they really leaned into him being that character and Nancy being Buffy in this.
Yeah,
so clearly
just little tributes.
Willow Rosenberg the whole season.
But Nick did find out that phrase is on monuments, murals, statues all over. And so they think that there are multiple Sin Eaters, and the Sin Eater was created from something like sourdough starter. And they're kind of discussing, like, is the sphere the soul? And they don't quite know what's going on.
We go over to Ryan getting Nancy the repaired stomach pumped, and she's like, okay, thank you. And she runs off to the lobster crate. And he follows her.
Yeah, like, good for on him. Yeah.
Right. But why would she meet him there? He followed her, like, in the building. Like, they met, like, outside of Tristan's little hut.
Yeah, I don't know if she just doesn't think, like, she doesn't give Ryan the credit. Like, she thinks that she can just blow him off and he'll be fine with it.
No, but he follows and he sees a picture of the glasses with the little child. And he's like, wait, we're in a lobster place. Wait a second. This is Lobster Man's lobster place.
And he is not happy that she's hanging out with the glass kid. And she points out, haven't we learned not to judge people by their families?
Love that, especially between those two characters specifically, because the Hudson's are bad news bears.
Oh, yeah. And we see the shell. She has said yes to dinner. And she gives Ryan a little bit of an explanation that I really needed the stomach pump. And Tristan came through with taking it from his parents and getting it to me. He was there for her when she really needed it. But then the glasses come in and ruin everything.
Yeah, they're the worst. Well, no, there's a lot of characters this season that are just bad people.
Yeah.
But there, a lot of yelling starts happening. Nancy smooths it down for now. And they say, stay away from our son, which Ryan replies gladly. Woo, we'll see how that turns out.
Come back from commercial and Ace is back at the morgue. He's trying to communicate And so he's turning on the water and then getting on the computer and looking up the article on Mia Preston. She was a college student and went missing after lightning storms and breakout fires happened in the area where she was camping.
Sounds right, because she was charred. So I'm like, okay, maybe.
That seems really like intentional, like lightning storms causing fires and all that. I mean, I know that really does happen and everything. This just seems like it was done on purpose.
Convenient.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all connected. In order to keep him from the courthouse, this has to be a big deal wherever we're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
And a man shows up to fix the cooling system, and the water that Ace had turned on turns off. They're not alone to communicate, so.
And they are not interested in communicating with other people.
Nope.
Because I have a theory about who this person is, but we'll get there in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Back over at the Drew residence, George and Bess are reviewing the plea deal that the defense sent over.
That took the time to warn them. He's like, just, you know, it's not great. Because he's like, your feelings out of it, George, but then he's still like guiding them a little bit.
Yeah, I love Carson. I think he is such a great dad to all of them. And not just like being a dad, a great mentor and like role model for them. He's watching out for them. He genuinely cares about them, but wants them to be able to do stuff for themselves.
Yeah. We'll see how much you love Carson in our postseason episode I'm going to throw for us, where we have to rank all of our characters.
Ooh, okay.
So be thinking about that, Sarah.
Should we do like a March Madness bracket system?
Ooh, maybe. Well, I currently have it in categories. So we'll do like Drew, Cruz plus dads.
Okay.
Those seven. And then like the love interests will have a category. And then the villains will have a category. The random townsfolk will have a category.
So the plea deal. It is to lock up all the books in the Historical Society, submit all artifacts to also be locked up, and make a public statement that Bess Trelawney Marvin was wrong to disseminate teachings and disavow such teachings, that such teachings have ever been a benefit. And George tells her, you should take the plea. And Carson's like, that's not your decision.
Deported.
Right. It makes sense. Like, that's how George is thinking. This is her friend and this is what she wants. And that's not entirely in her best interest, possibly.
So he does the right thing and, you know, explains you can't really tell her what to do. She's an adult and you need to be less partial.
And then we go over to Nancy and Nick are talking with the artist who restored the mural when it was defaced in the 80s, Kenneth Clark III.
He said the mural had died.
Yes. And he said that the Latin phrase was part of the original and he was just hired to restore it. And he kept the article because it was his first commission piece. And the article shows that the mural was defaced by Addie's parents.
What?
And when they talk to Addie, Addie is shocked. And she's like, well, that makes sense why I had trouble getting into the courthouse, because her and her mom have the same name.
And it's surprising because they seem pretty straight-laced, pretty much into following rules. And we go over to the Claw, where Addie and Bess meet with Addie's parents. And they explain the town painted a false mural. And they were activists trying to uncover the truth of what the message really was.
I thought it was showed incredible restraint that Nancy wasn't at that table, too. I guess in my head canon, she's like hiding on the other side of the booth, but it was not her conversation to have.
Yeah.
And so that was good that she understood enough to give a little bit of space there. So they explained that they grew up hearing the secrets hidden under the mural. Their ancestors were attacked on those grounds and the spirits who perished left a ghostly imprint. Bess is like, that's, you guys were activists, like you were standing up for what you believe in. That's great. And they were like, no, it's not worth it. We almost lost everything. And she's like, is this why you stopped sending me flamingo memes? Like, I'm not going to bring your daughter into this.
Yeah. And it's a good parallel to what's going on with her, obviously. And now it's letting her know, like, oh, I have a choice to make. I can either take this plea thing and lie, or I can get you the truth and do what's right. And so the timing of this is all very convenient.
Yeah. But also, and
because it allows her to get closer to Addie's parents.
Yeah. Addie's dad says, don't just try. You need to do it. Our biggest regret is not that we couldn't reveal the truth. And then Addie asks her mom to tell her all the lies that the mural is covering up.
We go back to court. So I'm confused here. Shouldn't this be later? Shouldn't this be 48 hours?
I think it is. Okay. I think they just skipped ahead.
Got it. So back in court, some amount of hours later, Nancy was able to get Addie's parents into the courthouse because a guard owed her for an old case that she did. That was just kind of a cute little throwaway line.
Yeah, Mr. Gibson stole the guard's track medal back in high school. Yeah, I'm assuming that it's related to a book, but I've been like going through and I have not found what book it is from. It just seems so specific of what she's saying that I thought it had to be a reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was funny. Kennedy's really good with those just little one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
George is asking Bess if she's certain about the decision that she made, that she's about to get up and say. And Bess responds that she's less certain every time George keeps asking. We learn pretty quickly that George thought Bess was going to do something different than Bess does.
Yeah. So Bess takes a stand and is in a beautiful red dress. Here I am talking about outfits here. She really stands out from the rest of the town and the rest of the court there.
Yep.
And she does what I'm pretty sure is not allowed in court. I'm pretty sure you're just supposed to enter your plea of guilty or not guilty, if I learned anything from my cousin Vinny. And she is saying it's not for the court to decide who has access to the supernatural. It's not a threat. It can be useful. It can save lives and heal. The real threat is the lie that we turned into history. The town has erased the truth of our own sins, but that lie ends today. And then we do a cut to Carson and George, like, WTF.
She blows pink smoke through the room. And I don't know if you got a chance to look at some of these extras' faces.
No, I didn't.
You need to go back. There are a couple of extras whose like jaws are unhinged from their mouths, like, from their faces, and like mouths agape, just like, oh, like it's so funny. Just watching this pink smoke, which I mean, if I were there, I probably would have my jaw dropped too.
Oh, yeah.
And then we hear Addie talking, and the truth comes through on the mural. Bess really was just fully like, oh, y'all don't like magic? Here's some magic. Let me throw you at your mural.
I love that Addie is the one saying the spoken truth going into the jar of acquirement. It is not one of these other white women taking the voice away from Addie. It is a member of the tribe that has been a victim to this. I thought that was really powerful that they made that decision.
Yeah, well said, Sarah. I agree. And it also, I was like, oh, okay, this is the Addie that I enjoyed last season.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad she's better now. But she says that when the governance arrived in Horseshoe Bay, things were peaceful at first with the native tribe and the founders. But then the settlers invaded and kidnapped every child old enough to walk. And when they tried to get the children back, the founders refused, took up arms, and killed many of their ancestors, drove them back, and the kidnapped children were never seen again. They know from oral history that this was the first sin.
Yeah.
We'll cut back to the court scene. The prosecution objects because, yeah, you should object to magic in the courtroom. And the judge overrules it, and then Bess keeps talking about the history.
Yes, and when Bess is talking about the history, I'm snapping my fingers. And I really love, we get a little shot. It was pretty subtle. Nancy, like, touches Addie, and she's, like, comforting Addie while Bess is talking about the Indigenous women and children. And I just thought that was a really nice little acting moment, because it's not a huge thing, but it's nice when we see Nancy being human and, like, passionate and not just goal-oriented. So I thought that was a really small moment.
And Bess has one of my favorite lines of anything ever here. She says, if you fear something you don't understand because you refuse to educate yourself, then that is on you. And I just love that.
Yeah, she's a badass. And that was great and very, very real. And she says, I am Bess Tarani Marvin, and I stand for the truth. Ooh, ooh, Bess.
Ooh, and yeah, George looks upset. Carson looks proud. And then going to Addie's parents and Nancy and Addie, they all look super proud as well. So that was a great moment. All right. Should we go ahead and take a break here?
We will be right back.
And we're back. So they're leaving the courtroom and George is saying, next time you want to pull a powder stunt like that, give us a little heads up. Carson looks impressed. But he says that the judge could have held you in contempt. And Bess is standing by what she did. She's like, I'm not in contempt. And now everyone knows the truth. And she steps away so George and Carson can have another little moment. And George is like, I couldn't keep my feelings out of it. Like, I'm going to be a terrible lawyer because I can do that. And he's like, no, clients never do what you want them to do. This is making you a more passionate lawyer.
Such a good mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And then evil Farquhar says Bess made up a bunch of lies and she's got minions behind her.
Yeah.
Carson says, control their witness. And I really loved when he asks if she's grooming a future jury pool.
I love the terminology there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because some people with those mindsets love to throw around grooming, but that's what they're actually doing.
So we go over to the morgue where Ace is talking again. Saying, I don't think you're here to hurt me. I can help you. No, it's too hot to chat here anyway. And then realizes that maybe the cold is what was helping her to communicate with him. So he drops the temperature, plunges his arms in ice water, and that's when the radio static starts again. So that voice is saying, please, I'm cold. The sky is gone. There's only one left. Please, what's going on? Where's the sky?
And he's wondering why she would be cold, because if she died in a fire. So yeah, there's something, definitely something up. At this point, I'm like, well, this isn't the camper. This is someone else. Or the camper was killed in a different way than we're being told that they were.
Yeah. And the voice is saying, I'm cold. All I remember is my hair wrapping around my mouth. And then the sky was gone. And Ace is like, but you have short hair. How could it wrap around you unless you're not Mia Preston?
So who do you think it is?
The shadow says, you know, I don't know, who am I? And we see like the shadow in the glass or whatever. Huh? Is this Temerence? Has she jumped from Chunky and now is an apparition here trying to mess with Ace?
Are you being serious?
I am being serious. I wonder if it is Temperance or something related with her. Because it would be possible, like, why is the sky gone? If there's so much smoke from the fires, yes. And, like, I know if you overheat or, like, get a really bad sunburn, sometimes you feel cold. So, like, maybe that could have happened with the fires. This could be another person altogether.
So, I don't know why Temperance would stop being a ferret and be a burnt girl.
I feel like you're judging me right now. I think that it is separate. I think that she is there speaking and it just so happens that at the same time a new body came in.
Okay, so I'm crediting you for being very creative, and I No. What I like about this theory is that it would justify, like, it's too close to the end of the season, in my opinion, to have a whole bunch of new things. So having it be Temperance or some other spirit that we've already dealt with makes a lot of sense, especially because you thought Temperance was around earlier this season. So, like, I could see that. And from a story perspective, it justifies Ace not being at the court because we got to keep this moving. And if someone's coming after him or trying to trick him or something, then from a story perspective, I understand writing him out of the courtroom scene.
Well, and then also, I think I saw someone post on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, the 12 children that were at that orphanage when Temperance went there in the past?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could those have been new recruited possible souls for the Sin Eater?
Oh.
And maybe. So I think that's what made me start thinking maybe Temperance is related in this, because they were saying like maybe one of those children was one of the late eight.
Because we find out that someone that is the Sin Eater was adopted.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you. I'm so confused.
Yeah, it could be nothing, but I like that there is like a possible connection.
Yeah, no, that's really clever. I hadn't obviously put any of that together. Do you think we're going to get Chunky again?
I hope Chunky is the last thing we see. Nancy Drew Investigations takes off. She's super successful, doing great things. And then we just see the little Chunky ferret run across. The one who got away.
Got away. Oh, man. I don't even know ferret life expectancies.
I don't know either, but I think when they're inhabited by Temperance, it's probably longer.
Yeah. All right. So back to what's actually happening. Nancy is telling Nick that she has a date lined up for after killing the Sin Eater.
So did you read their text conversation, her and Tristan?
A little bit. Remind us.
So you can only see part of her last message, but it says that she said she woke up thinking of him. And that she got his shellogram, and he wants to know if he can still take her out after everything with his parents. Like, I hope my parents didn't scare you off. And she says yes.
That's really sweet. Well, she is actively trying. That's good.
Yeah.
And here we are, where I'm like, obviously they're not going to succeed in killing the Sin Eater because this is all too casual and not all hands are on deck. I'm like, Ace is distracted, Bess is distracted, all this stuff's happening, but they're like, well, we got to do it right now. If it was really going to be the resolution, they would all be there. Yeah, so I'm panicking at this point. I'm like, something is going to happen. I did not quite know what was going to happen, but I knew something was.
I definitely did not predict that this was going to happen. But Nick is really doing a lot of the work here. He recognizes a book that the guy is holding in the mural, the now revealed truth mural, is one of the ones that Nancy took from the basement at the yacht club. But all the pages were blank. And so he's like, there has to be something more to that. And they just keep throwing around these questions. What happened to all the kids that they took? And they think they are missing part of the story.
Well, Bess is found to not be guilty of the criminal charges, so she's not being deported.
Yay!
However, there is evidence that she misused her position. So she loses the Historical Society, which is okay because we knew that they wanted to do a secret underground one anyways. But it gets turned over to Farquhar, which is not a great situation. But
and that seems
insane.
Yeah. Why would a judge turn it over to the defense? Like, basically, they're the defense. Like, why Judge Goodman has to be in with them?
Oh, I think a lot of people are that we are not aware of. Yeah. There's something sketchy going on. Sure, for sure. Do you feel, I'm getting a little bit, not to the same level, but last season when they just changed the actress of Temperance halfway through. It's obviously a different character, but I feel like we went from Lovett being the like issue with the storyline, like the antagonist of this specific storyline, to now Farquhar. And it just kind of felt to me like they just kind of like pulled the Temperance and they're like, actually now it's going to be this actress.
But maybe they're connected somehow.
I think they are. I think they were being witches together.
More believable than my theories.
All right. So really what I get from this moment is Bess is not being deported, but she lost everything else. Like everything else she would have had to do. So taking the plea bargain basically would have been the same thing as what happened because she lost the Historical Society.
Except she
didn't have to lie and admit things that weren't true.
Right. She was able to show the truth. And I think that does get through to some people. I'm hoping that that does mean something.
Well, yeah, it meant a lot to Addie and her parents. So that's something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then who knows how the other people felt. But Bess has to hand over the keys. We go over to the Drew house. George brings Bess a treat. And Bess is so, so sad.
But she does have texts from Addie saying that her parents want to go to dinner. And a text from Addie's mom that's new flamingo memes.
Which is really precious. And I love that George points out that it's a small win.
Yeah. And then she's saying, all you did was lost a building. You'll always be a keeper. Plus you have that unstoppable determination. The same line that Bess used when she threw the fundraiser for George.
And Bess thanks her. George said it's what best friends do. And then they are like, yep, you're my best friend, not Ace anymore. And I'm personally offended because we've made Platanker our like thing. And now they're like, why are they poo-pooing on Platanker?
So I've seen some theories on that as well, where there was some kind of curse from the glasses. Because something about the necklace and then the earrings that Bess put up as collateral. Maybe they got cursed or something. And are affecting them and distancing them from Ace. But my thought is Ace is so wrapped up in his own stuff that he's been pulling away. And I think he is probably a little bit upset that Bess wasn't able to break the curse.
Okay.
Because Bess can do everything. And so why wasn't she able to do this? Does she actually not care enough that she wasn't able to do it? And that's why he stopped trying it. And then she's probably a little bitter that he hasn't been there supporting her. So I think it's more of a real life distancing than an actual curse. But I could very well be wrong.
No, I definitely agree with what you're saying. It just like, him not being at the court didn't strike me as a huge deal the first watching. And then that line between Bess and George came in, especially because a few episodes ago, I had said that I needed more Bess and George together because we like never saw them together. But now we're being told in the scene that, no, they're super tight. I'm like, yeah, you're telling me that, but I haven't seen it. Obviously, this story, we're seeing it. Court stuff, but a few episodes ago I wasn't seeing their friendship, and there was a cute Platanker moment a few episodes ago, so I hope that it is plot relevant and not just some little like he moment, which not the end of the world, that you know you're allowed to have multiple friends and multiple besties, but it seemed like an unnecessary jab. So I'm hoping that either Bess and Ace have a big lovely thing later on, or I don't know. I want some resolution because I felt like the line was weird.
I think we'll get something. I feel confident that they will. We go over to the Historical Society where Bess and Addie are moving her stuff out. We find out that Addie quit her job at the bank because she decided today that she wants to be a more active activist and she wants to get on the town council, that there's so much she can do to help. And the devil woman comes in, Callie, and saying, oh, look, it's a girl who made the painting sad.
Wasn't that an actual reference? Like, I feel like there was something, some meme or something floating around the last 3 years where very right-leaning people said something about left-leaning people making something sad when they're really just trying to like bring light to a situation, like bring truth to a situation. Am I tripping on that?
That definitely sounds familiar, but I cannot place like what it is. I feel like it is like, that's gonna drive me crazy now.
Something I think this season is doing really, really well, other than just giving me great character moments to wrap up the 4 years, is this season is particularly strong with making me feel connected on a personal level and very much a real life. Like all of these problems, ooh, they're supernatural, but they're connecting to real things going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. And while Farquhar and Love It both drive me crazy. I think they're good villains because they're realistic.
Yeah.
So while I hate Farquhar, I am excited to get a little bit more of her this season.
I'm excited to see her get her comeuppance. All right. So Bess is trying to defend herself, saying that she revealed the truth and that was proof. And Callie's like, that was just proof that we need to put this all behind us. Don't come back or I'll have you arrested for trespassing. We go over to Icarus Hall, where we have Nancy, Nick, Bess, George, and Ryan all on deck with Ace on speakerphone. And they are coming up with a plan to kill the Sin Eater.
And this is feeling, okay, most of them are there. Like, maybe something will get popping. But some of these scenes are so fast. And when that happens, my anxiety is just like...
Mm-hmm. George volunteers as the new sinner to take the bait to get the Sin Eater coming around. Nick is not quite on board. He wants more answers.
Nancy tells George what she's going to have to do to activate the situation. So she kind of runs through the mechanics of how to get the door to work.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan asks if they have any ideas for a sin that George could commit.
And Ace is like, I got one down here at the morgue. And George is like, great, I'm on my way.
What did you think that was going to be?
I had no idea.
I was like,
but I did not expect it to be so terrible.
No, I thought it was going to be related to the body. I'm like, well, how is this a sin? What's going on? She gets there and Ace is having second thoughts. He's holding Connor's mug.
Yeah. And George is like, you know, don't be ridiculous. Takes a mug and throws it on the ground and breaks it and then immediately leaves. And Ace is like, yep, I'm definitely getting fired. I'm like, this is probably the one time that you will be.
So funny how fast that whole thing happened. It was beautiful because like I realized what was happening while it was happening, and like the way she dramatically sighed, snatched it from his hand and broke it without a second thought. God,
it was so peak George. And then she goes to the black door, speaks a poem, whispers, I broke Connor the coroner's mug. I destroyed something he deeply cared about on purpose.
That was really cute. I laughed at her delivery.
Yeah. And then she finishes the whole ritual and the roundel starts going.
I noted here that there is a yellow landline that I'm sure has been plugged in, a yellow phone for Nancy's desk, but it's the first time I've really looked at it and I want that yellow phone.
Okay, I don't think I noticed it.
Yeah, it was cute. But then they're doing a poison arrow check, getting all their ducks in a row. And the goal is to get there before the sin is forgotten.
Bess doesn't want to see that monster again, so she's going to stay. Nick is going to troubleshoot the extractor with help from his BFF, Tom Swift.
Okay, so when Tom was mentioned a few episodes ago, I was like, oh, Nancy's talking to Tom, that's cute. But this really got me. This really got me. Because Nick and Tom are like still communicating. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Nancy's going to reach out to whoever. Because Nancy is goal-oriented. She's going to solve the problems. She's going to keep all her contacts and keep all her networking. But with Nick and Tom, they had like a real connection, a real friendship, bonding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was like, they're friends. And so my little heart was just like growing and being shredded into 1,000 pieces at the same time. And it also shows that Tom is like actively helping them. So
And in the Tom TV show, in Tom Swift, he had a mug from the Claw. And so I like to think that he came back and hopefully bought the mug or pocketed it, I guess.
I mean, he's super rich.
Yeah.
He bought it.
But Nick also feels that there's just something more to learn, and Bess offers to help him. Meanwhile, Ryan is like, I'm going with you, Nancy.
Off to kill a Sin Eater. Wish us luck. And we got badass crossbow wielding Nancy. Nancy the Sin Eater Slayer.
Mm-hmm. And we go into the woods and love this moment between Nancy and Ryan, where Ryan apologizes to Nancy for how he reacted about her and Tristan. And he says, I know what it's like to have a parent keep you away from someone you care about, meaning Lucy. And he says, I don't want to be Everett.
And then she says, "You're nothing like Everett." And his face is the cutest.
I love that this moment happened before the end of the episode. Great. Because it shows his true feelings. It's not a reaction to something.
Completely agree. Completely agree. Really picked up on that and felt that way the second time for sure. And also, like, we've talked about, is Ryan going to be bad? And just a couple episodes ago, you were like, is he going to turn into Everett? And again, I like to think that maybe some of those things were planned and maybe some of those things might happen. But here it's like, no, this is your growth. This is where you are. Stuff can still happen in the last four episodes, but this is Nancy being like, you're not Everett. And I took it all very face value.
So now I'm thinking that his artifact friend, Red, she's going to go evil, try to take down and kill the glasses and try to take him with her.
Probably.
And he's going to try to stop that because that's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'm cool with that. And they can handle that in four episodes for sure. I mean, they can do whatever the hell they want in four episodes. They've done a lot. Like, they can do. I just don't think they're going to try to do too much. Like, it's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And the end of this episode. So we've got Bess, and he notices that the binding of the book he's looking at is hollow. So he pops it open and finds pages of information about the late eight, i.e. the Sin Eater victims, quote unquote.
And he finds a list of the native children who were kidnapped, and Nashua Kip, who is one of the late eight, was one of those children. And so they're trying to figure out, like, did they steal the children for the Sin Eater to eat? And no, because the soul remains. And they figure out that you need to fuse the soul of a person with the Sin Eater for the monster to live. That the late eight weren't victims. They were the Sin Eater.
Yeah. And the first sin that Nashua ate was his own kidnapping. This was getting so intense and so dramatic. And I did have a moment of like, oh, are they solving it? Is this the end of the big mystery of the season? Like, are we figuring it out? And then this all happens.
Yeah, Nick calls Ryan. Ryan's like, not a good time. I'm like, okay, one of the crew is calling. It's always a good time.
Yeah, especially if you're on a secret mission if you're on a really important mission that they know you're on, if they're calling, there's a reason they're calling. They're not just asking you to pick up chips and salsa on the way home.
Right. And it's also smart that Nick knew to call Ryan because he knew that Nancy would definitely ignore his call.
100%. Good call and agreed.
But before Nick can get it out to Ryan that Nancy should not kill the Sin Eater because it's a person, Nancy has already shot and hit the Sin Eater. And it drops a shellogram because the Sin Eater is Tristan.
Okay. So I was slightly right. Because earlier this season, I predicted that the connection between the time frame of the people or whatever, and that there was going to be another one to be killed by the Sin Eater or whatever, another body. So that's not exactly correct, but I did call that it would be Tristan.
You did.
So I'm giving myself half a point.
I'll give you a point for that.
Emotionally, I screamed obscenities that I will not say on this podcast when this moment happened.
Yeah.
And I mean, what the episode was, because I was watching it before you and I was like, I can't answer. And then later I was just like, well, this is what I wrote. This was my thought process.
I know when you first said that you wouldn't say anything about the episode, all I asked if it was good, and you just said, I'm not saying anything. I was like, oh my God, did Grant show back up? Did they reveal it's Ace Hardy?
If they had revealed that Ace's last name was Hardy, I would be like, stop what you're doing and watch it right now.
Yeah.
So maybe because Ryan's like screaming for Nancy when she shoots, maybe her aim goes back to being off 3 inches, and maybe the Sin Eater is not murdered. That's possible.
Possible, yeah.
Having Nancy kill her new love interest in the last five episodes of the series, when the big thing of this season is this curse that she can't be with the guy she actually wants to be with, is really freaking dark. And
kind of a quick fix of how to get rid of Tristan from the love triangle if there's a time jump where her and Ace get together down the line.
It's also very much parallels to Buffy of her needing to kill her love. I don't want to give spoilers for 20 plus years ago, but you know, when she maybe had to do something about Angel.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Especially with how blatantly they made her look like Buffy. They're like, this is what we're doing. And also, like, Buffy, the show, I felt was a little darker, like killed people a little more freely. Because we've had some death on the show, Nancy Drew, but not to the same level and not really a lot of important characters. And so I don't know. I'm very excited for the first 10 minutes of the next episode.
Do you think that he's actually dead?
I don't think he's dead. I think she's off by 3 inches because they made an important note of that in the beginning of the episode. And then she got better with her aim, but she was distracted. Like what Ryan was screaming at her when she shot. So I'd like to think it like, I don't know if she has to hit him directly in the heart or whatever.
Yeah, no, they never said that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe they can save him and take the soul eaterness away and make him a real boy again. I don't think she killed him. I did when I watched it and then I slept on it. And I was like, I don't think they did that.
Yeah, the more I'm thinking about it, I don't think. Because it also ups, they could just hide that from the glasses if he's dead. They just don't need to say anything, but Nancy will want to save him. And to do that, they would go to the glasses to see if they have any artifacts or something that could help save their son.
Oh,
so I think that would majorly up. And also, I feel like, I mean, it would be very dark if she just kills the potential love interest. But
that's not the vibe of the show.
It would also end the love interest if she, you know, did shoot him and he didn't die. I'm not sure that he would be sending her more shellograms if he got better.
Fair. So they heal him and he has to deal with, I was a sin eater. She tried to kill me. Maybe he doesn't know. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to find out. I don't think he's dead. I think it's going to be what the next episode is like healing him, ending the sin eater situation. Maybe teaming up with the glasses, that's a great idea. Because that needs to be dealt with too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Teaming up with or really like diving full into being enemies with.
Oh, I think that's going to be part of it. I think they will team up to save him, but then it will be bad.
Yeah. All right. So.
Should we see what the description is for next month or next week? Yeah. Okay. So next episode is called The Ballad of Lives Foregone.
Oh, shoot.
And the only description is Carson and Ryan work together to help Nancy.
So Carson and Ryan work together to help Nancy save her new love interest after she shot him with a poison arrow.
I mean, that's got to be it, right?
That's what it is. For sure. Well, that'll be fun. I'm excited. It definitely is one of the best cliffhangers we've had.
We have not had, there was another moment in the trailer where she's like holding someone like, you are not going to die tonight.
We have not had
that moment yet.
That's happening next episode.
It's got
That's kind of wild that they waited till one of the last episodes of the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. He's not dead. Calling it. No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. All right. So do you have your MVPs for the episode?
I do. And not only have I stuck true to not giving it to Bess, but I think I would have done that even without the rule this time, too.
Oh, look at you.
So, I mean, Bess was badass, like hands down, like I was screaming in her trial scene. But there were a couple other people that really got me this episode.
Okay. All right. Let's do the super sleuth first.
We are probably going to agree, but I definitely gave this to Nick.
Agreed.
He got that binding open, which was like the biggest thing. He knew to find the book in general because he remembered, like he saw it on the wall or whatever.
And he was just helpful with all the gadgets that he made and all that. Yeah, he was a clutch player this time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was super supportive of Nancy. I forget that they dated at the beginning of the show. I think they work really well as friends.
Boyfriend. I would love to be his ex-boyfriend because he's like such a good friend to his exes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. He's with her in the beginning during her whole Buffy scene. You know, he was very clearly the top one this episode for me.
All right. What about the most enjoyable?
I think this is the first time, I could be wrong. I think this is the first time I'm giving it to this person this season. I'm giving this to George.
Okay.
I really liked how invested she was with the best friendship, even though that line about Ace annoyed me. I really like how supportive she was there. All the little things in the courtroom were just good little facial reactions and everything. But the moment that really put it over was her snatching that coffee mug, throwing it to the ground, and whispering about it. It was so funny. Like, she walked out of there like she did not feel bad. And then she whispered and like, I think she felt a little bad.
Yeah.
She didn't have, it was definitely not like her episode, but I thought all of her parts were really strong.
Yes, I agree. I think you're right about that. I think that my most enjoyable was Callie Farquhar. Just kidding.
Let me slam this computer shut.
I actually really enjoyed Carson. Because I think that he did such a great job being a mentor, being supportive. Also, he is really putting himself out there. And I was also thinking about this. It was less than a year ago that he was on trial and was broken out of jail. And he is still practicing law here. So that's not specific to this episode. It was just like in general, his storyline is nuts. But I thought that he did such a great job. And it seems like he's going to get more involved with the supernatural now that he's like witnessed it and not seen, because he knew like the Wraith, that was a really bad thing, and he knows about, it seems like he's only been looped in when it's really bad things and not so much when it's a positive force. And so I'm excited to see his journey, like his facial reactions. I think it was one moment, I think when she did the powder and he was just like, oh, like a mouth open, a gape. I enjoyed him in this one.
Nice. All right. Well, I cannot wait for the next episode. It is going to be an intense one. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, keep on sleuthing.
Bye.
What is the perfect movie franchise? Does such a thing truly exist? The License to Watch podcast sets out to answer that age-old question. Join comedians Matt McGregor, Harris McCabe, and Colin Shaw as they dissect your favorite film franchises one movie at a time. Along for the ride is a different film industry guest for every episode. Listen as the boys play judge, jury, and executioner and decide which of your favorite movie franchises are worthy of a license to watch.